Aye. So, do you know much about the podcast?
I don't know. No, I don't. It was through Andy.
Wait, we'll do it again. Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm going to just get
suggested
you on.
Suggested it, so.
Oh. Aye. Yeah, yeah. Are
you ready?
Good.
This is the first time I'm doing this. And here we go.
So we don't tend to edit everything. We try and keep it as authentic as possible.
Right, so.
So when we first started, we used to listen and then redo it again, and then it just got to the point, do you know what? Let's just be authentic and look at our journey progressing through another business and seeing how well we get we go on this journey. Yeah. So it's really interesting.
It looks good. Yeah.
So you've travelled down for Cooper today then?
Yes. Yeah, so, based outside Cooper, a village called Craigrothy.
Right, okay. And you were just alluding to the fact that you were from Liverpool, or you lived in Liverpool beforehand. Eh?
Lived in Liverpool for 20 years. Went down there, when would that be, around 2000. I was in the corporate world then.
Right.
I worked for, do you remember Telewest, the cable company?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I worked for them, and they were launching a new product. It was called High Speed Data. Do you know what High Speed Data became? It became broadband. We were the first broadband provider in the UK. And they set up a technical centre in Albert Dock in Liverpool. And they asked me if I wanted to go down and manage the training operation. So that's what it was meant to be, 6 months. And 20 years later, I was still an adopted Scouser.
I was going to say, I'm trying to find your accent. My back's getting me back.
No, can you look? The Asda.
Super.
But, you know, we had a great time. I love Liverpool, and obviously got a lot of connections and business there as well. So that will continue.
Well, I think with the podcast, what we are trying to do when anybody that comes on is get an understanding of their business journey, but also to see if it helps anybody that's potentially starting business, already in business. Maybe they became the investor stage, but there's always something to learn. There's always golden nuggets along the way, listening to different types of people from different backgrounds. So, John, you know, here's a platform for you. You know, you're a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Is it business coach? Is it more about leadership and
Bit of both, and it's probably where I spread myself a bit too thin. That might be a lesson for some people listening. But yeah, I am an executive coach and facilitator, which means I work in larger organisations. Typically, well, my niche the last 15 years has been universities. So I worked a lot in higher education.
Right.
But I also do business coaching as well. I like the smaller end of, you know, sort of less than five employees, solo entrepreneur.
Right, okay.
So I do enjoy keeping my hand in with that. But yeah, a lot of my stuff has been in the corporate world and, you know, around like sectors like higher education. It's been a big passion of mine. I've really enjoyed doing that. So, and it's typically, you know, it's coaching leadership. It's typically senior execs in a university with the usual challenges that come with that. And there's a lot of pressure in that sector at the moment. I don't know if you read about that, but a lot of financial pressure. There's a complexity of it. Very, very challenging roles, very clever people. So I work with academics as well as professional services. So the very, very astute, clever people, they sometimes know what they want, but someone like myself just helping them on that journey, giving them that space to think, really.
When you talk to those guys, John, what do you think is that one thing that they're missing? What is the one thing that you could say, you know what? Because business owners go through that same sort of journey and they get to a stage where are they able not to articulate their thoughts? What's the one thing that you would say?
I think the thing I see, Vikas, is I don't think leaders have time to think. It's the big thing. Their days, their weeks are really packed. They're really compressed.
Yeah.
And they're trying to navigate a lot of organizational complexity, a lot of technical stuff, a lot of compliance stuff. Then they're trying to navigate relationships. They're trying to manage people. And they're in back-to-back meetings. So how can you find space to think? So if you're trying to develop your strategy or your plan, say you run a school in a university, where do you find space and time to do that? How do you figure out what it is you want as a leader as well? So what's your brand of leadership? What are your values? So they quite simply don't have enough space and time to think. And I think that's where the coaching part comes in, because we're mm-hmm. creating an environment where they can think effectively, which be otherwise absent from their day-to-day. So I think that's the main thing. I think people know what they should be doing. You probably get this as well. I think people know a lot of the times what they should be doing, and they have an idea of how to execute it. I just don't think they have enough time to do it, to think about it properly.
And this is where I think you can get burnout as well happening. We were discussing that just a couple of weeks ago in one of the episodes. And then it's also the separation of business and life. One starts to take over, mostly the business, and you kind of lose track of where your goals were originally when you first start off.
Yeah, very much. That's a big theme of mine when I'm working with people, is that how does your lifestyle complement, you know, your work life? And, you know, that's become more evident, hasn't it? During, I think COVID maybe sort of forced that agenda a little bit more, because people were actually working at home. But for me, there's no point in having the high flying career or the successful business if your home life is suffering as a result. I think you can do it for a short time. You know, you can make those sacrifices in the short term, but over the long term, I just think it's detrimental. So when I'm coaching people, very much try to find out about them, their passions and interests, and how do they stay resourceful? How do they keep themselves resourced and energized? Yeah. And bring those two things together. That's for me, that's really fundamental to what I do.
And how's the change been since COVID? You've obviously been doing it long enough there. How has people's mindsets changed?
It's confused. I don't think. So in the sectors I work in, I don't think there's a real sense of what the workplace should be like. You know, so they might have like a policy that says, well, you come into work 2 days a week. You know, you work from the office 2 days a week. But over and above that, there's no sense of what's the nature of work. In 2025, what's the nature of work?
Yeah.
How are we expected to kind of coalesce all this, you know? So sometimes you're at home and you're on your computer, and sometimes you're in an office with colleagues. So what's the relationship between those two things? And there's no discussions, you know, even these large organizations, you know, the strategic plans, there's no real discussion about the what I call the nature of work. What can we expect from the workplace?
Yep.
And when we're with colleagues together, what do we do in that space? And then what do you do in your home space? Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting topic. I haven't seen anyone properly address it.
Yeah.
So do you go in and speak to leaders as well as maybe line managers as well to try and bring them all up?
Yeah, I work with some quite senior people, right, you know, in those universities. And they've got the same challenges as everyone else. I think the sort of middle management level, that's an interesting one. So where you've got middle managers, I think they get squeezed a lot in the middle. So they get pressure from their teams and the people that they manage. Mm-hmm. You know, and they get, you know, let's face it, they get a lot of hassle and grief from that sometimes. But then they've got their bosses and stakeholders. Yeah. And so they get compressed in the middle. So we talk about that a fair bit, you know, in my workshops and any sort of one-to-one coaching I do. It's how to deal with that. So
what would you say, I'm putting you on the spot here. Mm-hmm. What would you say, you know, the top two, top three things that you see on a continual basis from leaders, managers, organizations that you already know what you're going into fix, because it's just universal.
It's generic, yeah.
It's generic.
Yeah, well, that's another great question. Yeah, off the top of my head, it is that thinking space. So thinking about what they want as leaders and how they're going to develop their kind of strategic plans. I think I'm quite strategic. I'm always, you probably talk about this as well, Vikas, but aligning to strategy. So sometimes the strategy is set by the wider organization, and then you've got your business unit or whatever, and you're trying to sort of align with that. I think sometimes there's a misalignment on that. So it's thinking about that. The other one is around relationships. So I spend a lot of time talking to people about relationships and conversations. That's a big problem, I think, in a lot of organizations. I don't think people are having those conversations. In fact, those are helping with that. And the third thing is the C word, it's confidence. You might have talked about the imposter syndrome on the podcast. I don't know, but you know, you probably heard of the imposter syndrome and people talking about the effects of that. And it's amazing. You know, you talk to some really switched on senior people when they've got the same kind of hang-ups. And, you know, something to do with gender is a thing, especially in some of the sectors I work in. Mm-hmm. That's still an issue. Sometimes it's a class thing as well. So, you know, sort of higher education, they might be the first generation in their family that went to university, and then they've got a degree and a PhD, and they've gone to become a professor, and they've got all the credentials, but they still see themselves, I'm the first person in my family that went to university. What am I doing here? Yeah. You know, it's really quite interesting. So they're the kind of three areas I work, like thinking space, like thinking strategically, thinking more than they want. The second thing is around confidence, and what they're doing there. And the third thing is, relationships. How to build relationships.
John, if I could ask you, in terms of leadership, we spend a lot of time talking about leadership. And what does that mean? What would you say is like the top three, top five characteristics of a good leader? What does a good leader embody? just very, very general. What, you know?
It's nice and early here. Simple questions today.
Yeah, from all the thousands of books about leadership. I think it really starts with, and you may have talked about this as well, but purpose. Mm-hmm. So having a real sense of purpose. So you've got leader, you've got some sort of managerial type title attached to your role or your business owner or what have you. But what is your purpose and identity? And I think that starts a lot with the kind of why. You know, you probably talk about Simon Sinek stuff. It starts with why. You know, I'm not a big believer in that. Why are we doing this? And that's a question I actually pose to leaders and their teams. Why, you know, why do you do what you do? And it's given people that sense of purpose. Why are we in education? Why are we running a building company? You know, why are we in financial services? And I think that's really important for people to tap into. A lot of times people have lost that sense. I've worked with teams who've really forgotten really what it is they do and why they do it. So the leader has to instill that in them. Mm-hmm. And I think following on from that as well, I think leaders need to get really good at storytelling and narrative. You know, the sort of story that brings, you know, the kind of past, present, future type ideas, mm-hmm. very simple model. Bring people along with them. So this is what we used to do. Now here's where we are, and here's where we can be in the future. Yeah. I think is a really good skill. I think humility. Mm-hmm. I think leaders need to be humble and to realize that they don't have all the answers. And in fact, they don't need to have all the answers, which I suppose leads to notions of, you know, empowering people and coaching. And I've always said it's about doing the right thing. So leadership is doing the right thing. Management is about doing things right, isn't it? It's often the way I've distinguished between those two. And in summary, I suppose it comes back to your values as well. So I know I spend a lot of time working in that space. You know, what are people's values? What's important to them? How do they demonstrate those values? What are the behaviours that stem from those? So
I think the difficult thing, to be this, the truth and reality of it is anybody starting a business thinks this is just an American cheesy buzzwords in their head, which I feel, because I think I was that person. And I think the reality is when you're having this podcast and you're having this conversation, you don't realise how poignant and how important the things that you're saying are at the very beginning. But you might realise that on your journey, maybe 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, when you've started building up your business where you've maybe got 3, 4, 5 employees, you realise that these characteristics, these words are instrumental to your business. Buzzwords, goals, targets, culture. And I think a lot of people go on that journey first of failing, getting back up, but there's something that keeps them going. And then they start lining themselves up with a coach. Everybody else that's maybe starting their journey, they don't realise the benefits of a coach. They think that's something that senior people get and really successful people get. I mean, a coach is desirable, and it's a really influential part of your business. It's holding you account. Mm-hmm. And if the monetary value works for you at the very beginning, then get one, because it'll best serve you, I think, and it'll excel you a lot quicker than your competitors. I mean, if I go so deep here now, John, what motivates you?
What motivates me?
What he's asking you, John, is what's your purpose?
My purpose? Yeah, there's a long answer to that and a short answer to it. I didn't have a brilliant school career or academic career. I was pretty average.
I was the same, yeah.
And kind of plodded on and sort of worked hard to get all levels and stuff, but I wasn't brilliant. I actually went to school here in Dunfermline. My old school was just down the road there. Right. And it wasn't a great experience. And I kind of fell into an average job. I was a lab technician in a chemical company. And then I even went to the Middle East at one point. I was fairly average out there as well. So I had this kind of average thing. And then and I came back and I had a job with the civil service. And I just went after a 9-to-5 job. And I saw, so they had a structured training program. So they had trainers that stood in classrooms and they would teach people how to use computers and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, oh, that's a really cool job. That's really, really interesting. And I liked the way they presented, and there was a bit of that kind of, a bit of showbiz about it, you know, making people laugh, you know, I thought, I wonder how you become a trainer. And as luck would have it, there was a vacancy came up, and went on all the trainer to become training to become a trainer. And I just remember the first time I went into a group of people, and the session was ergonomics, you know, how to set up your mm-hmm. your chair and your computer. And what I'd done is I'd made all the chairs wonky, you know, so I'd moved the chairs so they were all in an uncomfortable position. So and the delegates came, they're all sat a bit strangely. So did all that. And some of you are probably a bit too young to remember this, but do you remember the old acetates? Instead, before we had PowerPoint, we had these acetates, and you put them on the lamp, and it shone.
My goodness!
Yeah, that's gone back a bit. And then, if you're really clever, you could use your felt pen.
Yeah, you could write on it.
I just remember going in. I needed a wheelbarrow taking all the acetates I had for this session. You know, however, I do remember at the end of that, people saying that was really great. I really enjoyed that session, and that is my driving point. I want people to go away and not be average, you know, to think there's a different way, or that my session has moved them on in their journey in some way, and they don't have to settle for second best or settle for average. You know, we don't have to be an average leader or an average manager. We can become a really good leader. And that's the thing. It maybe sounds a bit cheesy, but is that kind of making a difference to people's lives? That's what drives me. Is I want people to have an easier kind of journey than I had, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
I think that you must get a bit of satisfaction for both, really, what you do, going in and changing businesses' mindsets and maybe the direction they are going in. And
yeah, I love it. It's great. We've been fortunate over the years to be involved. You know, on the business, the SME side. Being involved in large contracts when we're in the northwest of England, we won a large contract for the then Regional Development Agency, sadly now disbanded, but we put through 60-70 businesses on a 9-month leadership program.
Right.
And we were actually able to measure the difference it had made to them in terms of the headcount in the business and their turnover and that sort of thing. But most of all, the key thing that people said it gave them was confidence. It was the C word again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said then, what's the program giving you after 9 months of leadership training, masterclasses, coaching, action learning, overnight residentials? Confidence. It's giving me confidence to lead my business.
You can see it in people as well, in business owners, managers, leaders, bosses, all these different words, but you can see confidence. It turns up. It's a mannerism. It's a personality. You can just see it in people, and it's great to be around the positive people, and it's great to be around forward-thinking people.
Yeah.
Because once you're in that group, you excel as well. And, that'd be one of the things that people get away from that. And being able to recognise the difference that you've made, you know, gives you that reassurance that you're doing the right thing. So it's good for both points to get that communication.
Yeah. A quick story. You just triggered something else there, John. When we ran that program, So the program would kick off with this kind of overnight experience, and we were, so part of the specification was it had to be somewhere really good, you know, it had to be like 4-star. So we found this place called Peckforton Castle. If you Google it, Peckforton Castle, it's a folly. This guy made it. It looks like a 18th century castle, but 17th century castle, but he made it in 1890 something, you know. Right. But it looks like a medieval castle. And it's a big kind of wedding venue, but they use it for like Robin Hood and films like that, because it's just a castle, isn't it? so we booked that, and we had, you know, we booked the medieval dining hall, and we're going to have wine tasting in the cellar and all this stuff. So the guys all arrived. It was about 20, 25 of them on the cohort, and we went through the day's activity. And, you know, you're having a glass of wine later. They're loosening up a bit by then, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few of them came to me and said, I'm glad I stayed. I said, what do you mean glad you stayed? I said, well, when I pulled up at this castle, I was thinking about turning my car around and disappearing again. Why would you do that? I just thought that everybody would be better than me.
Right.
I thought that their business would be more successful than me. I thought they'd be better leaders than me. And there was more than a couple of them came to me, said similar things.
Imposter syndrome again.
They didn't really know they would fit in, or they were worried about how they would be judged. They thought this is a bit posh. It's not for the likes of me. You know, all of these. It was really, really interesting. And they all had their own businesses. They're all running their own, look, sometimes small, but you know, they were all successful in their own right. So it was a big lesson. Mm-hmm. For me, that one.
That's always an interesting thing, is how do you define success? What does success really mean?
Yeah.
When you look at success, what does a successful business look like? And it means different things to different people.
Yeah.
And you always try and measure yourself up to somebody else. You think they've got a really successful business. You know why the grass is always greener on the other side? Because the manure is always deeper. It's the only reason why. Nothing is ever better on the other side. You just don't know. You don't know what somebody else is going through. You haven't walked in their shoes.
This is the thing, where even when you go into networking, you see somebody driving the fancy car, they've got the suit, they look all the part. You're already, we judge everybody. Absolutely. Even though we say we don't, we do. And you always put yourself into a box on position. Mm-hmm. But really, once you break it down, we all have the same problems back at home life. And inevitably, what are we doing it for, I think, personally, is for your family growth, for your nice wee holiday, to sample nice things.
The finer things in life.
But it's just, there's a certain amount of people that are willing to go that extra mile to keep creating it for their family, for themselves. And that's what it is. So morbid as it sounds, we are going to die one day. It's just inevitable. But we have to enjoy the journey. And a lot of that is through turmoil and pain. But you get glimmers of hopes, and you get really good opportunities in life. It's just the ones that want to stick at it, I feel.
I think,
but when they get guys like John coming in and echoing that and showcasing, you know, you have to go through a little bit of this to gain this. You have to talk about leadership, the purpose, the best foot forward, the best version of yourself. What does it look like? What is it? How does it walk like? You know, how do you talk? Mm-hmm. But I think it's brilliant. I think it's so influential that people know it from an early age and adopt it at an early age. Now what you see is happening in society with anxieties and depressions and not knowing who they are. You instill that at a very early age and they become greater, faster, quicker, stronger, resilient. But
that's your why at the end of the day, around about where, what you're doing it for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what does, what, sorry, Inigo Vickers.
No.
Vickers, you speak, come on.
I think that when you start your business, or even if you're just in a normal job, a lot of companies don't invest the time they should in leadership. So your leadership and your management skill comes from, you've either seen a good manager and you want to embody his character traits, or you've been managed poorly. And that's how you think people should manage people, micromanaging people. And that's where it comes from. And very often when you get promoted up the corporate ladder, that's what stays with you. You don't understand how to manage a team based on outcomes. You don't. And how do you learn? Where do you learn? Where do you go to? Because what John says is true. If you're in middle management, you probably squeeze from your shareholders who's removed from the day-to-day of the business, and they just want to set a result. But you've got all your subordinates that's looking up to you going, hey, we're looking to you. Mm-hmm. Where's the direction of travel? What do we stand for as a business? and you're floundering because you know what you know. Where do you go to? What do you do?
I think that's a really important point, and something that Johnny said earlier kind of triggered a notion about we had a guy talking at one of our masterclasses a while back. His name is John Oliver, and I think it was Daft Trucks. He was he took over, and he had this expression about the shadow of the leader. Like so as a leader, you're always projecting a shadow. And he sort of wrote a book about it, and I thought it's kind of an interesting idea. So everything that you say or do as a leader is kind of scrutinized.
Mm.
So you can't help but cast your shadow. And that can be a positive thing or it can be a negative thing. But I think that people, if you are demonstrating good leadership and good qualities and good values and good ethics, and you care about people, people will remember you. So, mm-hmm. I've talked to people who mm-hmm. remember their, you know, a particular boss. I remember one lady had I'd asked them to bring along objects from their life, you know, that inspired them or something. And she brought along a little leather case, and it had a pencil and a pen in it. And I said, "What is that?" It was her first boss gave her that when she left.
Oh.
And she still had it 20, 30 years later. She just remembered him being like quite a kind leader and a thoughtful leader, and this pencil case was a representation of that leadership, which I really love things like. I really love metaphors and
it's such an important thing that you say. So you might be sitting here listening as a listener or new subscriber and go, this doesn't apply to my business. Let me tell you a story. The bigger you grow, the more it does apply. Starbucks. They appointed a new CEO. At the time that they appointed a new CEO, they were valued at $113 billion. 18 months later, they were valued at $74 billion. So they fired the CEO. They brought in a guy from Chipotle. And the day they appointed him, because he had a big track record, the day they appointed, they jumped to $94 billion. Okay, so when you're a good leader, what John has just said, that follows you through. That shadow follows you through. And that's mm-hmm. what the guys are buying. They now have confidence in this business because of what the leader's done.
Well, that goes back to what you've said as well, the C word.
Yeah.
Never heard the C word being called confidence, but I love that.
Well, it's slightly naughty.
You know, when you go into these offices, these places that you're going to help them, I've still not got a lot of truck with the wall that says integrity, passion, delivering that. And we've said this previously on podcast, but I mean, how do you, not maybe twist a needle, but how do you get them talking about that, and who's put that up there, and why was that put up there?
Yeah, you've just hit on one of my soapboxes.
yes,
that's 2 years now.
I think the values absolutely have a place in in today's workplace. Whether you've got a small business, I know some of you got. I've seen some examples of the SME stuff you're doing, and it seems to be you are tapping into this. These are our values. This is how we do business. And I think, a lot of you do that incredibly well. I think if I can be critical, in the larger organizations, I think it's possibly harder to do. Yeah. You know,
it gets lost.
It gets lost, and it just becomes another poster on the wall. You have to create the frameworks, the behavioral frameworks that sit under that. So you have to give people examples of, I don't know, passion. Like, what is that? If you're passionate about customers, what does that actually mean? And show people that. I've actually done some work where we've kind of done both. We've developed like a framework where, like, these are the positive indicators of customer excellence, for example, and these are some of the negative ones. This is when we're not demonstrating that. So that works quite well. In a lot of organizations, to be honest, they're not really aware of the values. They're not really prominent. They're not really a thing, which is a shame. And some of them are just poorly written. So it's like professionalism. What is professionalism? Yeah. That just allows you to play the game. you're not going to go to someone who's not professional, are you? So that's just and Lencioni calls that permission to play. It just allows you to play the game. So create values that are meaningful to your business.
Yeah, it has to stand for what, I mean, when you do that, you need to look at what is the attitude that it embodies? What's the behavior? Yeah. And how do you demonstrate that? What's the outcome at the end of the day? Just attitude, behavior, outcome at the end of the day. And if you can write that down in plain English, it'll be okay.
I think it's when you can, I think it's when you go across the whole board, whether it be from 10 employees up to 150 employees.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Now you ready?
We're going to start.
Now you have to look at me.
Yeah, just give us.
Come now.
<You're> so impatient. Right, go for it.
Okay, here we go. Take two.
Take two.
So we had the technical glitch here. Didn't we have a technical glitch?
We had a massive technical glitch.
First time ever.
So we followed on from the CFO, the CAO, the leader down at the bottom of the tree, and making sure the story is completely
aligned.
Aligned.
Yeah.
That's on the wee decorative wall. So you'll go into businesses and you'll see these buzzwords, and I know that's something you'll probably have to navigate the team through. I mean, how do you go around that?
Yeah, I have something called incisive questions.
Right.
So if I'm doing like a team day, like a strategy away day or something, I try and ask questions that are slightly confrontational, in a good way. So I remember asking a school of law, why would anyone come to study here? Yeah. And you get all the usual bloody, bloody, blah. We've got good courses, we've got good teachers, all this stuff. Okay. So you flip chart all that. That's all good stuff. Yeah. And then asked who their competitors were, which was a bit of a challenge for them, you know. And then so we came, maybe it's like Manchester University or something like that. If I had Manchester in the room and I asked them, why would someone come to Manchester? What would they say? Would they say they had good courses? Yeah. I score them all off, you know. They score off the whole flip chart. You see, they become quite deflated. Why would someone come here? Why would someone come to this school? Now you're into something interesting.
Yep.
And then a few of them gave me stories about, you know, particular ways that they'd worked with students or, you know, brought people through the system there. And so now we're starting to get somewhere with that. And it's the same in commerce as well. It's like, why would anyone buy from you and not somebody down the street? So you can kind of... Yeah, those are the things we say we are on the wall. But by really starting to dig under that, you know, another thing, like, what's important about what we do is another one. What's important about what we do? I think people lose that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, they just see the role as well, a quick story on this one. Yeah, admin. So sometimes people say, well, we just do the admin. I was with a group of professionals, and they were in the health sector. And we did a sort of exercise. We actually did like a networking exercise, you know, where they had to get up and move around and meet each other as if they'd never met before and say, what is it you do? And how'd you get on with that? Well, it's mostly admin we do. Admin, right, okay. And then we did some work on that and asked them a few other questions, gave them a different kind of recipe as a way of introducing themselves. And what came out of that was something, you know, quite different. What these guys actually did was they facilitated, you know, like if a new drug comes on the market, they want to test it. Well, you have to test it and you have to get clinicians involved and patient groups and manufacturers. They facilitate all of that bit. So they bring all that stuff together so that the drug gets properly tested and then it goes to market after that. So that's quite different from admin, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a completely different, that's not even the same thing. So you kind of have to, I think you have to work with people and ask those kind of what I call the incisive questions to kind of get the best out of them, to get them to see why should someone come and buy from us, or you know, what's important about what we do, what's our identity, what's my role in all this. I think are far more interesting questions that people can tackle.
Well, because it really delves into what they're doing, and it gives the inspiration. Yeah.
I don't necessarily think people buy what you do. People buy the value you create for them. Mm-hmm. What value do you create? And it goes back to what John just said, is you have two competitors and you have all those things written down in the box. But when you have your competitors sitting next to you, they're going to tell you all the same things. So it's about really starting to look at your business, time to think, analyzing it. And I think I said to you before, I think one of the biggest risks that's facing businesses currently is complacency. We've become too used to doing the same thing and getting the same result. What has to change in a business? Is it your leadership style?
Mm-hmm.
What's not off limits at the moment?
I think there's a simple word, right?
Yeah.
Put all that feeling. How do you make people feel?
So that I told you about a salesman. Hey, so a average salesman sells you a product with benefits. Buy this watch, it tells you time. A good salesman tells you an outcome. Buy this watch and you'll never be late for a meeting. An excellent salesman sells you a feeling. Buy this watch and you'll feel a lot more confident when people see it on your arms. And it is about that feeling, because that feeling gives you the opportunity to talk to your client. And the more you talk to the client, the more you understand it.
And that goes back to what John said, confidence, which is one of the top three things, confidence.
Yeah.
And people, as a team, once you've got a team that's so strong and confident and retaining your team for long periods of time, I mean, that shows that there's something you've got. You've got a good culture there and everybody's listened to.
I think what you said there sort of resonated. Is it the Maya Angelou? People will forget what you said or did, but they'll always remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we can, you know, anyone listening to this running a business, you know, should maybe think about that. How do you make people feel, you know, when you show up to work, how do you make your team feel? How do you make your customers feel?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that sense of, you know, I said it about humility earlier on, possibly plays into this, but it's that self-awareness, isn't it? It's kind of being self-aware as a leader, saying, well, actually, I'm not feeling great today, you know, I've just had a look at the bank accounts or what have you, but I've kind of got to go in and wear my game face. It's Henry V thing, isn't it?
That's every day.
Wear my game face, and you know, and that's I think that's a really important thing for people to maybe think about.
I definitely think that game face, because you need to show up as the best version of yourself, irrespective of what's happening in your life. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. Yeah. That's never easy.
Yeah.
Because you might wake up and you go, oh, how am I going to pay the wages this week? But you need to put your game face on when you go in. Mm-hmm. Because that energy is it's that thing of transference. I don't know if you watch football, especially if you watch kids playing football.
Or Scotland.
Sore subject. But the parents stand at the side of the pitches and they start screaming at their kids, and that sort of passion transfers onto the kids, and either aggression or whatever it is. But then the guys, it's just a game. So let's just be positive, because positive transference is a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But it is game face every day.
I take the 10-year-olds, the football coach, and I had to kindly speak to the parents about be quiet.
Yeah.
Just be quiet. You've no idea how you're affected. I know you're passionate.
There we go, yeah.
I know you're passionate, but just
zip it.
Okay, have the conversation with them in the car. But once they're on the pitch, it's my job, not your job.
Play for the love of the game.
Well, that's
for the love of the
world. Don't get me wrong, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. You're like, oh, it's 5-0 now. No. Can I get a strip on? Can I go on?
I think that's a really good point, though. Like, it's like when to have that conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's something we could all bear in mind. You know, so we do get frustrated. We do get annoyed with people sometimes. So when do we have that conversation, and where do we have it? I think it's a nice one. Yeah.
You're doing something just now as well. Working on better conversations within the workspace.
Yeah.
So let's chat about that a bit.
Yeah, so it's been a sort of interest of mine for a number of years, primarily because people tell me it's an issue. So they have issues having those conversations with people. So I've written an ebook. It's on my website. It's called Find Your Voice, How to Have Conversations That Matter. And I've been in a couple of seminars, and I've done some workshops on it. And it's something I've rolled out across, you know, my clients and staff face to face, and they really respond to it. They say, this is great. Well, no one's really shown me this. So I think that we aren't having those conversations that Johnny was talking about at the right place at the right time. The consequences of that are huge.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely enormous. I've had coaching clients that I've been involved in or been part of long protracted HR grievancy type processes, some for up to 2 years, would you believe?
Wow.
So if you extrapolate the cost of that, both in financial terms, so all these different panels sitting to adjudicate on something, but also the emotional cost of that, and then the the sort of wake that leaves behind is absolutely huge. So I wanted to do something about it. So hence the book, which just sets out some really simple ideas around conversations, what stops people having conversations, and how they can have better conversations as a result. Because for me, the outcomes are potentially amazing. You know, if we can avoid all that conflict and all that fear, and then if we can start to have proper conversations where people collaborate and we're in that thinking space, that it can only be good, I think.
So how do people find out about that? How do you find out?
If they go to johndrysdale.net/ebooks. So there are some free downloadable resources on there. So
got
two or three, but one of them is the book. So I'm happy for people to download a copy.
I shall do that.
The book. Find Your Voice: How to Have Conversations That Matter. And it's trying to encourage people to have the right conversations and not live in fear and frustration and, you know, kicking themselves because they haven't spoken up. And also helping people, you know, find their voice in meetings, and that's another thing, you know, so that kind of psychological safety element of it. People aren't speaking up.
But they're thinking it.
They're thinking it, yeah. And usually someone else is thinking it as well in the same room.
Yeah, they're thinking it, but they're not saying anything about it. And there could be a myriad of reasons why that happens. Mm. But a lot of people think, oh, you know, when you call a staff meeting, what's in it for me? This is just a waste of my time.
That is a big one. Yeah, that's kind of, let's just go through the motions.
Let's just go through the motions and I can get back to work because I've got more important things to worry about than what my leader has to say.
Well, there's also another element as well when you've maybe not got the right culture in a business and you're phoning up your staff, your team, for a conversation. Say, listen, are you free on Friday? I'm just going to bring you in the office for 2:00. You know already their anxiety, just what's happened here. And as a mark of a good leader, you should, you know, don't worry, I'm just wanting to get you in for a bit of feedback on some things, if that's all right. I'll stick the kettle on for you. That just calms him down. And a good leader should notice that what they're saying matters and it can affect them. You know, if you're saying that on a Tuesday, you're maybe making them feel a bit anxiety.
Anxious.
The next few days. Yeah. So it's really delivering the right conversation at the right time. And hard conversations, you know, no matter what, they're uncomfortable and they're difficult, but it's to best serve everyone.
Yeah, and they're best delivered at the first best possible opportunity, I always talk about. So if it is going to be, like, let's say, feedback of some description.
I like the rewind as well. Sorry, John. No, sorry, if I never meant to cut
Johnny, you off. Johnny talks a lot, butts in a lot.
That's all right. I talk a lot as well. So
I kind of get a word in.
Well, I was actually going to say something really nice about you.
Are you?
But I'm not going to do that now.
Come on, John. You know we're only joking.
When you talked about being calm and things, I noticed you in your business, like, you're extremely calm. Sometimes I can't even read what's going on. Until we had a podcast and you went, I'm going through this, I'm going through this, I'm going through that. I'm like, oh my God. I never even knew that. You're just calm. You know, how did you get to that point?
It's mental choices, I think. And just having, like what Vickers was saying earlier about there's people that you learn from, and we did speak about this before, but there was a foreman on a job, and it didn't matter what happened, he was super calm. You know, there'd been mayhem going on, all different trades, all fighting against each other, whatever was going on, and the guy was just super calm, and would just step back from all, and there'd be solutions, and it's just taking that time to think straight, just to kind of what you were talking about earlier, taking the time out. So that resonated with me as a young guy there, and that's kind of that drew forwards. But it's easy to get caught up in it, but when you've got the thought process, it can just get you just step back for 5 minutes here, because there's always a solution. I'm a good problem solver. Like, and we always say, like, if nobody dies, then nobody actually dies. So what's the worst that can happen? And there's other people you can call upon just to have different conversations, get different ideas as to how to solve a problem. But there's always a solution, generally. And that's, everything's solvable. And then we'd always talk about the fact that everything's always at the epicenter, the worst it'll ever be, really. A week, a month, a year. You know, you start to forget the names of the people that were involved that had you in sleepless nights for 2 months. all of that learning's just brought me to a point where, and realistically, if all the businesses failed tomorrow, I know that I'll be all right, and I know that my staff will be all right. They've all got transferable skills, trades, you know, they will be all right. So what is the worst that can happen?
That's how I'm it's a good way to think about it.
God, I feel like lying down just for some calm now. I think it's your voice. Yeah. It's like David Attenborough. So what's on the horizon for you now for the next, for this year, for 2025?
Yeah, I'm at this stage of my career now where I'm sort of developing a sort of portfolio of interests.
Right.
So I still want to continue. I do enjoy the coaching side. So I don't think I'll retire. I think I will always be able to offer that. Good. Space. Want to do more writing and have a properly published book.
Right.
I'd like to do more of this sort of thing, radio shows, and spread the word and you know, start conversations that matter, you know, because I think a lot of our, you know, the discussions we have at organisational level are quite surface-like, you know.
Mm.
And I think I can help get underneath the surface a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and have those discussions about things that are really important and can change things. Absolutely. For the better. So
I think for businesses in general of all sizes, you just get stuck in the dailies quite easily. You know, after 4 or 5 years, whatever, you're just hit a ceiling because you're working in the business too much all the time, and it takes somebody like yourself and Vickers to come in and just make you step back from it, and it forces you to take that time and actually start looking at your business in the direction that you're going in. Because sometimes you're just floundering a bit, you know, they're going through the motions, and where's the growth coming from if you're too busy working in it all the time?
Yeah.
So it's a critical, I think, to have people like yourselves.
And exactly, and Johnny touched on it a little bit, but our time is finite, you know?
Mm, yeah, exactly.
We know all this, and, you know, I've lost friends, and you know, had my own brush with cancer myself. So right. I realised that, you know, that you know, our time is finite, and we're lucky to be here. Actually,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
That each day we're kind of blessed in a way, aren't we? Really. So yeah, for me, it's just kind of more of the same: spreading the word, working with great people, enjoying what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And helping people on their journey. So,
no, perfect. Thank you very much. So, if people want to check you out, it's just johndrysdale.net.
.net. Yeah, yeah. That's nice. my new website. So it talks about executive coaching, business coaching. There's resources on there as well. So I will be populating that as we go along. So I want that to be a place people can download stuff and. And yeah, just any sort of speaking opportunities, and if people want to bring me in to do workshops, then I'm happy to do.
Perfect. Well. Lovely. So
on that, we've got a strap line.
This is your world.
Shape it.
Or someone else will.